You're listening to the Morning Brew with Stu Podcast, and here's your host, Stuart Brooking.
And here we go. Welcome to the Morning Brew with Stu. As always, I'm your host, Stuart Brooking, and my guest today is a first-time guest on the podcast. He is a colleague of mine, and he is one of the best sports minds in this space. He is the host of the Jack of All Trades podcast, Jack Burney. Jack, welcome.
Stuart, thanks for having me on, man. Once I heard, you know, you did your own podcast, I was like, man, I got to come on, and here we are. Let's do it.
Yeah, I know. I kind of discovered yours by you sharing it on Facebook with Will. So,
yep.
All right. I'm going to start with this. You're a Cleveland Browns fan.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had kind of a roller coaster season, Jack. They've been up and down. There have been some things. There have been some times where they beat the Colts, granted, off of two BS calls. You know, we can call it what it is, but they were not the correct calls. And then there's been times where you've watched them play and you're like, I don't know if this team is a playoff team. Joe Flacco came out, played well. He played really well. I think he showed that he's the guy, at least for the rest of the year. This defense is for real. And I think what we've seen in years past with, you know, I go back to 2018, I believe it was, with the Minnesota Vikings and the run they went on with Case Keenum. They had a good defense that year. You look at the run that the Eagles went on with Nick Foles. Like, yes, we know Nick played out of his mind in that stretch during the playoffs, but that defense was also really solid during that time as well. And I'm not saying Joe Flacco is going to have one of those runs. Who knows? Maybe he goes into old Baltimore Joe Flacco if you guys get in the playoffs and he goes on this crazy run. But what I'm getting at is I think it's very possible you guys can make the playoffs. I think it's very possible you guys could win a game, steal a game in the playoffs.
Yeah.
Kind of what's your thoughts on this team so far this season and those types of things?
You said it, man. Roller coaster is probably the word I would use. I mean, it's been up and down. You know, Nick Chubb goes out for the season in week two. They lose Deshaun Watson. They have 14 players right now on injured reserve. And if you would have told me that before the season, I would have been like, oh, they're probably like, what, 3-10 through 13 games? They're 8-5. They're right in the thick of it. So, I mean, it's all you can ask for. They've won a game with four different starting quarterbacks, which is crazy. I mean, Joe Flacco has played well. I mean, he's shown he still has some left in the tank, which is really good. But like you said, the defense is really, you know, where they hang their hat. Jim Schwartz comes in, immediate turnaround. Last year, they're one of the worst defenses with pretty much the same player group. They bring in a couple pieces. This year, it's a 180, and that's a testament to Jim Schwartz, testament to Kevin Stefanski. I think Myles Garrett's having a top five defensive player of the year candidate type year, and I think he's probably the best defensive player. I mean, you watched that Colts game. I was at that Browns Colts game. He took over that game, man, especially in the first half. And yeah, there's been some crazy games. I mean, that Colts game comes to mind. They beat the Niners on that missed field goal, and they're 8-5. I think they got a chance, like you said. I think with all the injuries and everything that they've dealt with this year, just to make the playoffs would be a pretty good accomplishment for the Browns this year. I think they got to go 2-2 in their final four to do that. They have some, I would say, favorable games, two against the Bears and the Jets. If they can get those, I think we'll be talking about the Browns making the playoffs, which would be pretty exciting for sure.
Which is how I feel about the Colts. I mean, I'm shocked the Colts are where they're at. Listen, I thought we would win 7 games this year. You know, everybody was predicting 4 or 5 wins, but I kind of looked at the schedule and said, you know, if we're able to do this, I knew the talent we had on the team last year. They just didn't play up to their potential last year. I don't blame them. I mean, we had a lot of stuff going on last year that didn't really allow them to play up to their potential, Jack. But I want to go back to this because every year, when you guys first hired Kevin Stefanski, Baker Mayfield was the quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I said, this was the perfect hire, Jack, because when you looked at what Baker succeeded at in Oklahoma, which was the play action pass. And he 80% of the throws he made at Oklahoma came off the play action pass. Mm-hmm. Didn't work out there. He went on, obviously, we know he's at Tampa Bay now and the journey he's had. But it's like every year, like, oh, well, this is the year he's going to get fired because, like, you know, they brought him in to do this off the run they went on with this guy and this didn't work out. And then it's like, well, you know, last year we can't really fire him because we had Jacoby Brissett and we had Josh Dobbs and, you know, Deshaun came in through 11 games. And then this year it's like, well, I mean, this is going to be the year he gets fired, right? Because, I mean, I understand Deshaun got hurt. But then it's like, well, Deshaun got hurt. Because it looks like, and I'm not trying to say I want him to get fired, but what I'm saying is, like, you guys are talented. And it looks like even with Deshaun Watson, and maybe it took him a little bit longer to get going than people expected, but even with Deshaun Watson, at times it looked like the Browns didn't know what they were doing out there.
Yeah.
And it's like when you have a guy with that kind of caliber, like that goes back to coaching. But here he is, and I think the job he's done right now, I know I've heard you talk about Shane Steichen being the coaching candidate or coach of the year candidate. I think Kevin Stefanski could very easily have an argument for that as well.
No, I totally agree. And I've been up and down on Stefanski since he's come to Cleveland. You mentioned that first year with Baker Mayfield, 2020, they go 11-5. They win a playoff game. I mean, it was, he was the coach of the year. And then, but since then it felt like, you know, it felt like that was the peak. And every year since then, they've kind of, you know, gotten a little worse, even though in my opinion, they've gotten more talented. They've added guys like Amari Cooper, like, you know, those type of guys. Nick Chubb becomes probably the best running back in the league before he goes down with an injury. I think that was part of the reason why the offense struggled so much early in the season is the loss of Chubb. But I think Watson, I mean, part of it's on Watson. I mean, I thought he would be back to being close to the quarterback, at least close-ish to the quarterback we saw in Houston. He just has not been. And I think it's a testament.
Well, he was before he got hurt. That stretch there.
That Ravens second half, he was 14-14, and he led a game-winning drive. And I was like, man, this is finally the guy that the Browns have been waiting for since they traded 3 first-round picks and gave him all that guaranteed money. And then, of course, he goes out with an injury that for the season that next Tuesday. I mean, but it's really been a really great job by Kevin Stefanski. Yeah, I think they got to extend him. I mean, I think he's a coach of the year candidate for sure. I mean, just what he's been able to do with, let's say it, below average quarterback play to be 8-5 right now. I mean, even Watson wasn't playing great for most of the season, except for those last couple of games against Tennessee, Arizona, and Baltimore. But they've had 4 different starting quarterbacks. They're 8-5, 3 games above 500, and they're in the driver's seat for the playoffs. And I mean, like, if you would have told me we would have 4 different quarterbacks, I would not have thought we'd be close to the playoffs. But the fact that they pretty much control their own destiny, that just shows what a great job Kevin Stefanski's done with this team. I think the players have bought into the culture he's building there. They've had a next man up mentality all year. And I've been really impressed with Stefanski this year for sure.
Yeah, me too. And so I want to go from one AFC team to another. And listen, Jack, I get it, right? Like, you're the Kansas City Chiefs. You win a couple Super Bowls. You had the league MVP. Your guy's the guy, right? They're all wrong. And what I'm talking about is this whole Kadarius Toney situation where they're upset about this or that or whatever. And what I'm about to say, I'm no way, shape, or form comparing myself to NFL coaches or saying I coach NFL teams. But you know this, Jack. I coach football. Mm-hmm. And I, at the middle school level, but I coach wide receivers because that's the position I played, all this type of stuff. Jack, I could tell you from the end of time, or from the beginning of time, shall I say, they have taught wide receivers, and I teach our wide receivers, when you go up to the line of scrimmage, you stick your hand out to get a check from the ref. The ref will say, you're good, he'll give you a thumbs up, or he'll signal for you to scoot back or scoot forward, depending on if you're the line of scrimmage or not, depending on how many guys are on the line of scrimmage. Kadarius Toney didn't do that. And you're a yard over the ball. And I think it was Chris Long that made an interesting point, or Richard Sherman made an interesting point when he was talking about this on his podcast, which was they don't give the defensive linemen any warnings before they call a neutral infraction. The Chiefs being mad that the refs called this an offsides on the final play of the game shows a lack of awareness to me. Because I'm huge on awareness in sports. Like, you got to be aware of I'm not saying you can't be confident, but you got to be aware of your abilities and those types of things. And you're excusing bad behavior by saying, oh, it's the referee's fault. He was offsides, Jack.
He was
offsides. He was a yard and a half offsides. I don't know what the Chiefs want them to do. They're not going to change the rules because you disagree with it. You're offsides. Stop crying about it. Yell at the guy who needs to be yelled at, which is Kadarius. And let's move on.
Yeah, when I saw Patrick Mahomes, I mean, I've never seen Patrick Mahomes that mad before. And I thought he was yelling at a coach or Tony, but it was the refs. And I'm like, what are you guys mad about? I love that the refs came out. I think it was the NFL referee, like they're whatever they are, their like organization after the game. And they said, yeah, we're going to call that. We couldn't even see the ball because that's how far he was lined up with the ball. He was blocking the referee's view of the ball. I mean, it was blatantly obvious. I think part of it is, I mean, like, I understand why Mahomes was a little bit frustrated, because last week against the Packers, they lose that game. He throws a deep ball to Marquez Valdes-Scantling at the end. He gets interfered with. They don't throw a flag. So I think maybe it was a little bit of built up frustration thinking, all right, the refs kind of, you know, screwed us last week and then we lose on this play this week. But I also think it was a very results based play that they got mad at. Like if Kelce would have gotten a first down, but not scored on that remarkable, you know, lateral to Tony, I don't think they would have been as upset. I think part of it also is, I think I saw that Tony like did a similar thing and didn't get flagged for it like three or four times earlier in the game.
Well, let me say this. I've seen that too. And I've seen people post pictures of Tyreek Hill being offside.
Yeah.
Listen, they never called that. Just because you do something that's just because you rob a bank and don't get caught doesn't mean it's not illegal to rob a bank. It's still illegal. You just haven't been caught yet.
It's like you're going 45 and a 35. I mean, and you get pulled over once and you've done it the whole year. Well, you're still speeding, you know? It's like the same thing. But I think the reason the Kansas City probably is mad is because when they called it, you know, there's a minute 30 left in the game. They're trying to go on a game-winning drive, you know? It's like my speeding analogy. You go 45 and a 35. You wave high to the cop every day. He doesn't pull you over. But then you're driving past the cop and you got a just married sign in the back of your car, you know? And then he pulls you over that day. You're trying to win the game, you know? It's a big moment. I think that's more what the Chiefs were mad about. I don't know if I heard Andy Reid talk about it, but I think Andy Reid admitted, like, look, Tony was offsides. But I just think the outrage by Chiefs fans, especially, I thought Mahomes overreacted. I thought Mahomes going up to Josh Allen after the game and saying that didn't sit well with me at all, because he's a competitor. He left it all on the field. Allen's been on the other side of those calls so many times in his career. He does not care that you guys got flagged for that. It was the right call. And if it was the wrong call, I get it, but it was the right call. So I'm like, they can't be as mad as they are at it, you know?
So we're in agreement on that one. So we don't have to go into that too much more. And listen, I'm a Patrick Mahomes guy. A lot of guys don't like this. And this goes back to the LeBron conversation. I know you're a LeBron guy. A lot of people don't like LeBron because us in the media and us as fans put him in a GOAT conversation. He didn't do it. We did it to him. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of people who punish him for that don't like him because of that. And it's like, he didn't do anything to do that. There's a lot of people who don't like Patrick Mahomes because a year in, he throws for 50 touchdowns, 5,000 yards. Everybody calls him the baby goat. And he didn't do it. We did that to him. We called him the baby goat. We anointed him as the next great NFL quarterback without him really kind of ever proving it at that point. And it's like, those things have come to bite him. And now all the people who don't like Patrick Mahomes are like, see, this is what I'm talking about. Blah, 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 blah. And it's like, I'm a Patrick Mahomes guy. This just didn't sit well with me in that type of case. So I don't want it to come off as like, oh, I'm a Mahomes hater, because I'm not. I love Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
But you were wrong.
So. Yeah, I'm a big fan of Mahomes as well. I mean, through 5 years, I think he's had the best probably 5-year start to a career as a quarterback in the history of the league. You know, 2 MVPs, 2 Super Bowl MVPs, all that stuff. But, you know, he's just such a competitor. And I really liked how he normally wins and loses with grace, you know. But this time it felt like he was kind of being a sore loser, especially with the handshake with Josh Allen. So he came out and apologized for it. I think he knew he was wrong as soon as it happened. But, you know, he got caught up in trying to win a game and getting upset that they lost. So I can't really blame him too much for that.
All right. We'll go from one group of fans crying to another group of fans crying. We can talk about the college football playoffs and we can talk about how it's not fair to just have four teams. We can have those conversations till we're blue in the face, Jack.
Yep.
But the point is, there's four teams. It's the final year for it. That's how it is. And the point is, the committee makes the decision. And what's interesting to me is this. I don't know how much of my show you follow, but all year I've done a top 15 college football ranking.
Mm-hmm.
All year. I've ranked the top 15 teams based off of my rankings. I don't really care what the AP poll says or what the coaches poll or the CFB poll says. I do it based off what I've seen. With Jordan Travis, I was not a believer in Florida State. You didn't take care of business in some of the games you should have taken care of business in. There were close fights. You had to battle a lot of close games, and it's like, if you were a real college football playoff contender, you should have blown out these teams by at least 2 scores. And instead, you're fighting with them going into the fourth quarter with, you know, 3 minutes left, and then you win by 10 or 7. And it's like, that's not impressive to me. And, and I'm not saying – I understand it's not about style points. It's about the record, all this type of stuff. But my point is, then he gets hurt. then their backup gets hurt, and now you come in your third string. You barely beat a Louisville team who lost to a nobody in the ACC before. So you look at all this. My point is this: I thought Texas should have been in. I thought Texas was one of the best teams in the country, but because they had lost as well, I had them at eight pretty much, or seven pretty much the whole year, right above Alabama. But here's the thing. You knew Bama was getting in when they beat Georgia.
Yeah.
You knew
it. Mm-hmm.
But, and I understand week three and week 11 are different stories, Jack. I understand that. But you're not going to put in a SEC championship Alabama team and not put in Texas, who beat them head-to-head.
Yes.
Who we know the head-to-head matchups there, all that kind of stuff. I don't think the argument should be we're mad Alabama got in. I think the argument should be we're mad Texas got in. But my point is Texas has a stronger argument because the team they said is the fourth-ranked team in the country, they beat head-to-head earlier in the year. We've already seen that.
Yeah.
I understand it's a different team. It may not be the same if they meet up again in the national championship. But my point remains, I think the committee got it right. It's hard to do. It's hard to make this, especially when you talk about the four best teams, which we'll talk about that statement here in a minute, especially when it comes to Georgia. But there's a lot that goes into this. But what did you think about the four teams in the country right now?
I think I understand why Florida State fans were upset. You know, they went 13-0. They won their conference championship. They
so did UCF, and they didn't deserve to play in the national.
Exactly. But they won their conference championship. They're the first ever Power 5 team undefeated to get left out. With that being said, I think the committee got it right. And I think the goal of the committee is to put the four best teams in, not the four most deserving teams in. Did Florida State maybe deserve it more than Alabama and Texas because they went undefeated? Sure. Were they better than Alabama and Texas? If you asked anybody outside of Tallahassee, Florida, they would say no, because they weren't, especially with the way they're currently constructed when they're making the decision. The Jordan Travis injury, it stinks. You know, he was a great player, probably a Heisman candidate when he was healthy, but he goes down, and then they, like you said, they don't look overly impressive. They score one offensive touchdown in the ACC championship game against Louisville that just beat Kentucky. And I heard Florida State fans trying to bring up Ohio State in 2014 when Ohio State got in with Cardale Jones, who was their third string quarterback. Ohio State beat Wisconsin by 59 points in the Big Ten championship game. Eye test has to matter at least a little bit when you're evaluating the strength of two teams. Yeah, Alabama, you know, they beat Georgia. And once that happened, like you said, you knew they were in. And then if it's between Florida State and Texas, I agree with you. The games matter. Head-to-head matters. And I didn't think you could have Bama in without having Texas in. So I would have gone with the same four teams the committee went with. Yeah, I understand why Florida State fans are upset. But I think Michigan probably would have beat Florida State by probably two touchdowns.
And that's my point.
Yeah,
this
exactly.
Is the thing, this is why I don't like – I'm not anti, because I've come around. I've had a lot of friends kind of convince me to come around a little bit. And I thought if you were going to have a year for a 12-team playoff, it's this year. But
yeah,
quite frankly, Jack, I'm sick and tired of on New Year's Day and New Year's Eve watching college football playoff games and it's 67-7.
Yeah,
it's 47-14, or like, quite frankly, I'm sick and tired of it. I didn't think Cincinnati should have been in. I never thought, you know,
Notre Dame. Yeah,
mm-hmm. I'm tired of Notre Dame getting in because every year they get boat raced when they go in, and it's like, if you put Florida State in, and I know people are gonna be like, well, you can't say that. You gotta play the game. All we watched them barely score an offensive touchdown, like you said, against Louisville, Jack.
Yeah.
You're telling me they're going to go in against Michigan?
No.
Who has a really good defense and be good? They're not. They're going to get boat raced, and it's going to be ugly. We're going to be waiting for the next game, which was Texas and Washington. Everybody's mm-hmm. going to just kind of have it on the background, not really care who's playing Michigan in the national championship. This is a much more compelling four, and you could say people can come up with these conspiracy theories, ESPN's in it, blah, 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 whatever. They got the four best teams.
Yes.
All right.
And I would say for the first time in a while, I think all four teams have a pretty much equal chance to win the title. And if Florida State was in, I wouldn't feel that way, because they would be just a level below the other three teams. And the thing that told me all I needed to know about the committee getting right is the reaction in the Michigan watch party when they were watching the rankings unveiled. That audible gasp you heard when it was Alabama and not Florida State.
I think they're beat already, man.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you. And I think it just shows that they were rooting to play Florida State because they thought it was a cakewalk to the national championship, like me and you thought it would have been. But no, they got to prepare for Nick Saban in Alabama, and that is going to be a heck of a game, I think.
Not just Nick Saban in Alabama, but you got to play Nick Saban, Alabama, who happens to just be the hottest team in the country right
now.
Oh,
yeah, and they have a month to prepare. Like, yeah. They're going to know you're the team like the back of the hand for sure.
And you can't steal their signs because, you know, Connor Stallions is gone, and I'm pretty sure Nick Saban knows everybody on his staff. Can't put him on the sideline. Here's the thing, man. I'm a Quinn Ewers guy. I do draft stuff every year. I was really hoping Quinn would come out this year. I think he's Patrick Mahomes-esque in the way he plays. I understand that he's, you know, behind Caleb Williams and Drake May this year, but man, I'm telling you, I've not been this excited for a national championship game in a long time. I think Texas beats Washington. I don't think Washington has a good enough defense to stop that offense that Texas has got going on there. I think Bama beats Michigan, and I think we're going to have a rematch from week three, dude, and I'm here for it. Quinn Ewers and Texas versus Alabama, the two of the most historical programs in college football history, two of the biggest programs in college football history, going at it, man. It's going to be fun. Steve Sarkisian playing his former head coach that he worked under. All the storylines you're going to have into that, man. I think it's going to – for me, that's what I want to see. I don't want to see Michigan in there as much as what Michigan's done all year. They've been the second best team in the country all year. That offense at times can be stagnant. J.J. McCarthy at times does not necessarily know what he's doing out there, and it's tough to watch. I think you get Bama out there who's rolling right now, competing with Texas. You're probably going to set viewing records for a college football national championship game.
That'd be awesome. I mean, Michigan's a great team. Like, they have probably the best defense in the country, but I can't pick against Nick Saban in a game of this magnitude. I mean, like, I think Alabama is going to win that game. And then Quinn Ewers versus Michael Penix is a fun quarterback matchup. It's two of the best passing offenses in the country. You know, Washington's got a couple of NFL receivers lined up outside as well. And I love Quinn Ewers too. As an Ohio State fan, you know, it hurts to see Quinn Ewers having so much success at Texas, with Ohio State having Kyle McCord and losing to Michigan again. But Quinn Ewers, I'm rooting for the guy. I think we get an Alabama-Texas rematch as well. And oh yeah, by the way, those two are going to be in the SEC next year. They play again next year. So we might see it in the national championship game, and then we'll get to see it in the regular season next year too. So it's going to be a lot of fun for sure.
All right, to wrap up, we're going to wrap up the college football stuff, but not quite yet. I want to talk about one more thing here, Jack. We talked about it. We've said it multiple times. The four best teams. The four best, not the most deserving. To say that and to leave Georgia out based off of one game is the part I struggle with when you say that. Because they've been the number one team all year, minus a few weeks where Ohio State was the number one team in the country. Yeah. But before that, they've been the number one team in the country pretty much the whole season. They lose one game to a red-hot Alabama, and they get left out. And I understand you didn't. I'm the type of guy who says my stance on this is win the games. Do your job. Complete the season undefeated. Do what you're supposed to do, and you don't have anything to worry about. You don't have to leave it up to the committee's hands. I do. Part of me, though, does say you can't say it's the four best teams in the country
without
having Georgia in that conversation.
So who would you have had Georgia in your Final Four, Stuart?
No, my Final Four was my Final Four was the exact same Final Four that the College Football Committee had. It's just mine was based off of resume and circumstances. Mm-hmm. So mine was once Georgia lost and Bama won. As long as Texas did what they were supposed to do in the Big 12 championship, they were going to be in, because you can't, like I said earlier, my rationale was I can't put Alabama in and make the argument that Alabama is one of the four best teams in the country and not say a team that beat them head to head. Now, granted, it was week three, but the team that beat them head to head is not also one of the four best teams in the country. So that's where I gave them the thing over Georgia. And when it came to Georgia and it came time for you to play a real opponent, you didn't really do it. You lost. But it is hard for me, and it was something I struggled with, to say, how can you say it's the four best teams in the country and leave out Georgia?
Yeah, and like you said, Georgia was number one all year, pretty much. They were really rolling before that Alabama game, and they're going to get punished. And they dropped, I believe, five spots in the rankings.
Dropped to six
below Florida State, which, if we're comparing, you know, 5 and 6, I would have had Georgia at 5 and Florida State at 6. I'll just say that. But I think, you know, you know, they lost by three to Alabama, who is the fourth best team in the country. I mean, I don't know if that warranted as big a drop as it did, but I didn't think you could have Georgia in the Final Four. But are they probably one of the best four teams in the country? Yeah, because I think they would be favored in a game against Washington. They'd be favored in a game against Texas, and it'd be very close the line in a game against Michigan. So I think by that logic, I think Georgia is one of the best four teams, but I still think the committee got it right.
Me too. All right. I want to transition to – this wasn't on the rundown I sent, but I do want to talk about this because it is something that's been bothering me, which is this whole transfer portal thing. And I'm not the get-off-my-lawn guy. I'm not the old man that doesn't like to change and, like, all this type of stuff. But I do think it's a little bit ridiculous at this point, Jack. And I've been – and people are going to say, well, that's because you're anti-athletes making their – listen, I wrote an article. I wrote a research paper in college as to why college athletes should be paid. An argumentative essay. Like, I've been a fan of college athletes being paid. It has nothing to do with that. I'll use your guy, Kyle McCord, as an example. I was not a fan of him transferring, at least right now. Because here's what's going to happen, Jack. He's going to transfer to a Mississippi State, a Texas A&M, somewhere like that, who's, you know, the money's not all that much different than what you're going to make at Ohio State off of NIL and all that kind of stuff. You're going to transfer to one of these schools. You're going to be a starter for 3 weeks, stink up the joint. They're going to bring in some highly recruited freshman who's going to replace you. It's the same story. It happens every year. It's the same thing. My thing is, and I watched this video of Tom Brady talking about this when he was back when they did the Brady 6 documentary a long, long time ago. But he talked about his time at Michigan and how there were seven guys on the depth chart. And he sat there and he battled it out to become the starter at Michigan. You don't have that anymore. We don't have that dog that says, I'm going to stay here and compete. If I was Kyle McCord, I would have walked up to Ryan Day after the Michigan game and said, I do not care who you bring in. I'm the best quarterback for this team. I'm going to compete and may the best man win. Then if I lose, then you can transfer. We get it. You lost. But to stand there and to not compete, and it's not just Kyle McCord. There's a lot of quarterbacks who are like this. To stand there and not compete, to go somewhere else where you potentially could be the backup there too is, and I hate to say this because I don't want to be this guy that, you know, one of these guys, but it's soft to me. It's just soft. And I think you gotta be able to compete and you gotta be able to say, I'm the best guy for this team. I don't care who you bring in.
Yeah, I agree. And I think part of the conversation with Kyle McCord, since we're using that as the example, I probably think what happened was Kyle McCord went into Ryan Day's office and said, look, am I guaranteed the starting position next year? And Ryan Day probably looked at him and said, no, you're not. We're going to bring in people to compete with you. And Kyle McCord heard he wasn't going to be the guaranteed starter and said, all right, I'm going to explore my other options, because he thinks he can walk into a different program and start immediately, you know, and that's just not how it's going to happen. And I agree with you. I would like a guy to go out there and, you know, want to compete and say, look, I'm the best quarterback for this team. I'm the quarterback that can win this team a national title. Yeah, it didn't happen this year, but it's going to happen next year if you keep me as a starter, you know? I like that attitude with my athletes. But as for the transfer portal, I just think it's a blessing and a curse for college football. Like, it's good, I think, for guys like, you know, like a Joe Burrow. He transfers away from Ohio State. He wasn't going to start. He didn't start over JT Barrett. He didn't start over Dwayne Haskins. He goes to LSU, wins the Heisman, wins the title, and is the number one pick. But that's like that's not most cases in the transfer portal. Most times guys go and they think the grass is greener and it's not always greener. And I mean, I just think they got to get some sort of control on the transfer portal situation a little bit. And I don't want to be that guy, because I think college athletes, they deserve to get paid. They deserve to make their money. They deserve to try and seek better opportunities. But I just think some of them don't realize that, oh, maybe I'm walking away from, you know, the right place for me, because they don't want to compete, you know?
And I think, too, and I'm going to use this as an example, and I understand who his dad is. I understand who his uncles are. I understand the last name this guy has. But Arch Manning, if there was another quarterback who was as highly touted as he was coming out, who had the five-star next to his name, if there was, and this is why I kind of gained a little bit of respect for him, the second he heard Quinn Ewers is coming back, any other quarterback would have transferred. And you can say, well, any other quarterback may need the money, all this. I'm talking strictly play-wise. Kids would have been like, I'm transferring. I want to play.
Yeah.
The respect I earned for Arch Manning to say, Quinn's coming back. Maybe I'm the best quarterback for this team. We'll stay. We'll compete it out. If Quinn wins, Quinn wins. If I win, I win. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I'm not just going to get up and leave because things didn't go the way I kind of hoped it would go. And he go to the draft and all this type of stuff. I think for me, that says a lot about somebody, and I want to see that kind of stuff again. I get it. Like, it's different if you're transferring from, like, we cover Indiana State where we're at.
Yeah.
Where we work at the news station. It's different if you're playing at Indiana State and IU comes, Indiana comes and says, hey, we're giving you a chance to play Big Ten football. Come play here. That's different.
Yeah.
But when it's a seemingly a lateral move, or it's seemingly a decrease move, and yet you're still not going to, like, I get the Michael Penix going to Washington thing.
Yeah.
That made sense. I'm not saying he shouldn't have done that, but we see it all the time, Jack, with guys like Tate Martell, who
great example,
to four different schools, and off you transfer to, you end your career at UNLV. UNLV hasn't had a guy who came out highly recruited as Tate Martell ever. And you go there and you can't even win the starting job.
Or like
those are the examples I'm talking about.
Like JT Daniels, he starts at USC, then goes to Georgia, and then ends up at Rice. Like, you're right. I like the attitude of the Arch Manning. Look, Quinn Ewers is probably going to win the starting job. They made the playoff with him, but I'm going to stay here and compete. And if Quinn wins the job, I'm going to learn under Quinn, and I'm going to get my shot when he goes to the NFL. That is, I would like to see more of that in college football.
For sure. That's where I kind of wanted to bring that up, because I didn't really want to let that slide, because it was something that was bothering me and I hadn't really spoken about it. And, you know, this NIL transfer stuff's going a little crazy. Hey, let's talk about the NBA, Jack.
All right.
You're a LeBron guy.
I am.
I don't know how you feel about this, but I'll say this for me. I think LeBron's the greatest basketball player to ever live.
I agree with you.
I think he's the greatest basketball player to ever. We can talk about rings all we want. We can talk about 6-0 in the NBA Finals, whatever. I don't care. Give me another argument besides that, all that kind of stuff. My point is this. What did the in-season tournament do for LeBron's legacy? Because I think winning the first one, the inaugural in-season NBA championship, I think being able to, at times when people are like, man, he's 38. How much more has this guy got left in him? And to show you're still the baddest man on the planet, when there's guys like Giannis, there's guys like you know, Tyrese Halliburton in Indiana, who's really, really good. Mm-hmm. But for LeBron to still be like, I'm the greatest player ever, and until I'm done, nobody else is going to be the best player in the league. I just think, to me, LeBron – it's still cementing his legacy, and has had at this point three different Hall of Fame careers. And I think at this point, all this in-season tournament does is cements his legacy even more.
Yeah, I agree. And I agree with you. I think LeBron is the greatest player of all time. You know, as a Cavs fan, I'm a little biased, but I mean, you know, if anything, I don't think you can argue that LeBron's career in terms of longevity is, no one has been this good for this long as LeBron James, 21 years. And I think that's exactly what the in-season tournament did for his legacy. You know, like, it's winning the first one, you know, he wins the MVP, they win the in-season tournament. He's won everything there is to win. And I think it showed LeBron and the Lakers, like, hey, we're good enough to play with anybody when we are at our best. And it could give them confidence come playoff time to try and make another run at LeBron's fifth ring. And I think the in-season tournament win just speaks to LeBron's longevity, how well he's playing in his 21st season. We haven't seen anybody play this well this long into their career like LeBron has. And it just proves that his dominance and play at such a high level won't be stopping anytime soon.
Yeah, I think LeBron's changed the game. Listen, MJ changed the game in a lot of ways. And a lot of people tried to emulate Michael Jordan. The closest we ever got was Kobe Bryant, and Kobe was spectacular when he played. He had five championships himself, all those types of things. LeBron changed the game in multiple ways. Obviously, he changed the game because you're looking for that wing who's about 6'8", 6'10", who can play all five positions. I get it. There's Giannis's of the world, the Kevin Durant's of the world. But I think he changed the game in the sense of, in a way Michael Jordan didn't, which is, actually, I think he added to what Michael Jordan did. Michael Jordan was the first athlete we ever saw work out and kind of lift weights and build his body up, right? LeBron's the first one we've ever seen, nutrition-wise, take care of his body. He spends millions of dollars a year on his body. He changes that way for athletes, and he's telling athletes, if you want to be successful long-term, a lot like Tom Brady did in the NFL, if you want to be successful long-term, you're going to have to pay the price financially to do so, which means you're going to have to pay a lot of money to feed you know, to take care of your body and those types of things to deal with an 82 game season. And I think he's done that at a very high level.
That's a great point, both of those. And I think another way LeBron changed the game is really he kind of ushered in the player empowerment movement that they're empowered, you know, in free agency. I think LeBron, you know, he's won three titles in three different spots. And, you know, he was kind of the first guy in that first Miami Heat super team. It kind of created an era in the NBA where the super team era, and I know you can argue if that's good or bad for the game of basketball, but I think LeBron was kind of the first superstar to, you know, kind of leave, you know, a pretty good situation in Cleveland where, yeah, they weren't winning titles, but they were making the playoffs every year, being a top seed in the league, but he left it to go win a title. And I mean, I think that's another thing that LeBron did. He gave the players the power to, you know, try to leave when they want to, you know, and try and chase championships. But I mean, he's done so much for the game of basketball. And like you said, the longevity is probably the thing that most impresses me right now about LeBron. He's in his 21st year, and you can't argue he's not a top 10 player in the league.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Let's talk about the team that they beat in the in-season tournament championship, which was the Indiana Pacers. And you're not from here. You're not from Indiana. You're from Ohio. Mm-hmm. You're a Cleveland Cavaliers fan. We're going to talk about the Cavs here in a minute. But I grew up in Indiana. My grandma was a big Pacers fan. Big Pacers fan. She loved it when Reggie Miller was there. I grew up mm-hmm. with Jermaine O'Neal jerseys, all this type of stuff. I remember 2014. I remember it. Paul George, David West, George Hill, Roy Hibbert. I remember what that was like and how close they came to beating the Miami Heat and going on to play in the NBA Finals. Here's the issue. This Pacers team is probably better than that 2014 team, if you had to ask me. I'd say they're probably more talented, at least, than that 2014 team. My thing with the Pacers is this. You've done a great job of drafting. You've done mm-hmm. a great job of building this team to the draft. Which in a small market like you have to do. Ask the Bucks. It's what the Bucks have done, yeah. All these types of things. My problem comes, how do you keep all these players? Or how do you – because Paul George, the reason he wanted to leave Indiana was he went to management and said, get me a really good power forward or a great power forward, and we can bring in a championship. And they said no. And he mm-hmm. said, well, I want to go somewhere where I can compete. And that's why he left. I don't see Indiana doing that, man. I don't see them. If Tyrese went to management right now and said, hey, we're this close, dude. We're this close. We got the talent on this team to make a run. We got the talent on this team to be great and to do some special things. I'm not so sure, Jack, if he went and said, bring in somebody, please, to help me do this, that they would do it. I don't think they would. I don't think. My problem with the Pacers has been I don't think they care about winning. I think they care about being mediocre. They care about making the playoffs. Hey, great job. We did a great thing. We made it to the first round. What can we do? We can't beat Cleveland. They're playing Golden State in the NBA Finals every year.
Yeah.
Can't really do anything about it. Oh, we made it to the playoffs. Can't really beat Milwaukee. It happens. I think they're for real, Jack, but I think the question becomes, how long can they keep this together before it unravels like we've seen in years past?
Yeah, and I mean, the Tyrese piece, I mean, he just signed the max extension. So, I mean, I don't think you have to worry yet about him threatening to leave like Paul George did. But I think Tyrese Halliburton is going to be a first-team All-NBA player this year. He is one of my favorite players. He's one of my favorite players in the league. He's becoming a superstar. I think he's already a superstar. But people are really taking notice at how truly special he is. I would say, for real, in the sense of, are they playoff contenders? Absolutely. I think the probably their ceiling this year is a second round appearance, though. I don't see them advancing past the second round. I mean, they have one of the top ranked offenses in the league. You know, they put up so many points, but their defense leaves a lot to be desired. They're a bottom five defense, I would probably guess. And I would think that's stopping me from like saying, all right, I'm putting them in the same conversation as Milwaukee and Boston and Philly and Miami in the East that are like, you know, those bona fide title contenders. I would put the Pacers right around the 4-5-6 range in the East where, yeah, if they get the right matchup in the first round, they can win a playoff series. But I think, you know, they haven't made the playoffs since 2018. So, I mean, I think that would be a pretty good accomplishment making the playoffs this year, all things considered. But how do you build on this? That's the real question. Yes, I think they're for real, that they're playoff contenders. Yes, I think they're building towards something, but I think they're a piece away from being like, you know, actual title contenders. And if they don't get that through the draft, like you said, I don't really know if they're, because they're probably not going to get it through free agency. And I don't know if they're going to take that swing with a, you know, a big time trade, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the issue I've had with this organization. I'm not a Pacers fan. I never claimed to be. I like players. I don't like teams. You know, I'm a Gordon Hayward fan. I'm a you know, LeBron fan, but I don't ever claim to be a Pacers fan. But I did live here. I have a lot of family members who were, so I do kind of care about this team a little bit. And the point is, like, I just don't ever think they've really cared. I don't think they've ever really. I think they've been the team that stands up on the podium and tells you, we care about winning, we care about winning, we care about winning. But then their actions don't really show that at times. And I think they've, you know, the old saying, Jack, actions speak louder than words. Yep. I think their actions have spoken a lot louder than their words have. And I worry, like you said, I don't know if they make those swings that they need to make. That's been my biggest issue with Chris Ballard and the Colts. You know, you've been so close, but you don't make those swings to put you over the edge. And that's the difference between great teams and good teams. And I think the Pacers will continue to be a good team until they can make those swings.
And that's what I appreciated about the Cavs. Yeah, I know the Cavs are not as great as I would like them to be early in this season.
Let's talk about them.
But, like, you know, they made that swing. You know, they go from a team that made the play-in with, you know, Darius Garland having an all-star year, Evan Mobley in his rookie year, Jared Allen making an all-star game, and they trade 3 first-round picks for Donovan Mitchell, and they're like, all right, we're going all in. And yeah, you know, they're still, I would say, probably in the middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference right now, but at least they took that swing to try and take that next step.
My thing is this. I understand. I talk about this all the time in the NFL draft because I do a lot of draft content come draft time. And I talk about this all the time in the NFL draft. If you swing for a quarterback and you miss, you're not the only one. Yeah. I understand there are certain ones where you probably shouldn't be swinging on, but it's like, my point is this, like you said, you have to swing. And if you fail, nobody's really going to fault you because I guarantee you a lot of the same people who are going to be criticizing you on ESPN are the same ones who 6 months earlier were telling you, you should have made that move. That's the right trade. All that kind of stuff. And it's just like, you have to take those swings. And if you don't take them, you won't succeed. They've done a great job. Cleveland has. I also think Cleveland's done a great job of drafting. Yes. I mean, oh my God. Let's talk about my guy. And I say my guy as if I know him. I don't know him. And this is as far as any comparison we have goes, as any similarities have, is we're both Vincent University alums. It ends there.
Oh yeah.
It begins and ends there. And I'm talking about Craig Porter Jr. Mm-hmm. He got torn up in the summer league.
Yes,
he's
he did.
Been playing really well so far this year. Again, I'm not as athletic as he is. I can't play basketball. Again, our comparisons and similarities end, and we both graduated from the same university. Jack, tell me about Craig Porter Jr., man. I love this guy. You cover him a lot. You know, I see the sports reports every morning. You cover him a lot. Talk about Craig Porter Jr., man.
Man, what a story. I mean, he's from Terre Haute. He went to Terre Haute South High School. Obviously, you know, we cover Terre Haute sports, and he went to Vincent University too. And it's really cool to see a guy from, you know, the Wabash Valley making a name for himself in the NBA. He's really impressed me with the Cavs. You know, Darius Garland missed a lot of time early in the season due to injury, and Craig Porter, you know, kind of stepped up and filled that role as that backup point guard, made a couple of starts. You know, he was going at Joel Embiid in an overtime game, I should say, an in-season tournament overtime game in Philadelphia. He's going at Joel Embiid, and he hits the go-ahead shot with a minute left, challenging Embiid. And I'm like, man, this guy has no fear. And, you know, he's an undrafted guy. You know, he started at Vincennes, ends up at Wichita State. You know, he takes that kind of, you know, that Fred Van Fleet, you know, kind of pipeline to the league where you go to Wichita State, you know, you're undrafted, and now he's getting his chance. And I think he deserves more playing time. I mean, he has been outstanding. He's a great defender, great shot blocker. And he does all the little things well that you need to succeed and hang around in the league for, you know, a couple of years. And I'd love to see him get more of a shot. And I think he should be the Cavs backup point guard. I think he's fighting for rotation minutes right now. I'd love to see JB Bickerstaff get him more regularly involved in the rotation. But what a story. What a rookie year he's having. And I just expect his role to continue to grow.
I'm rooting for him. I watched him win the national championship there at Vincennes. You know, I was there when they won it. I like to think I was a little good luck. I'm totally kidding. People are going to be like, that's the most selfish thing you've ever said on this podcast. I'm totally joking. I take no credit for anything that team did to win the national championship at the junior college level. Let me say this, Jack. What's Cleveland got to do? What are they missing to take that next step? You kind of talked about they swung on Donovan Mitchell, and you know they're still kind of in the middle of the pack. What do they got to do to take that next step up? Like, what positions are they really kind of, you know, missing?
I think the biggest thing that's holding the Cavs back is Evan Mobley. And I love Evan Mobley. I loved when they picked him. I thought they got it right when they picked him third overall. But when the Cavs drafted Evan Mobley, a lot of people like myself and a lot of people who follow Cleveland basketball said, oh my gosh, this guy has the potential to be a Chris Bosh, a Kevin Garnett, at his ceiling an Anthony Davis type player if he can develop his offensive game. He's an elite defender already, and we thought by year three he would take that leap offensively. He hasn't taken that leap, and that's really what's holding that this team back. I thought he would take that leap offensively by now, but with him and Jared Allen, who are both elite defenders, who have somewhat of a good offensive game inside the paint, neither of them can play outside the paint, and it's really tough on the Cavs spacing. It's really tough when you don't have a big guy who can stretch the floor and who can shoot outside threes, because it makes you one-dimensional offensively, and when you need to shoot the ball from outside, you have to rely on your guards. So I think they need Evan Mobley to develop and take that next step offensively, and I think that's the biggest thing probably holding the Cavs back from being a good playoff team to a true championship contender. So I would like to see that Mobley development start soon, because Donovan Mitchell, I don't think he's going to extend. I think this might be your last year with Mitchell. So yeah, time's running out, I think, on this current Cavs core. Yeah.
All right, Jack, listen, man, it's been fun, dude.
Yeah, sir.
I loved every minute of it. Hey, great debut. We're going to have you back on.
I'd love to have you on my show too. So you'll come on whenever
you ring and I'll answer, dude.
Yes, sir.
So, hey, before you go, let the people know where they can find you, what you're working on, promote your show, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I do a weekly sports podcast called Jack of All Trades. You know, you can listen to it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at JackBurneyTV if you're interested in my TV stuff. And you can also follow the podcast on Instagram at JOAT Sports Pod if you want to listen to the podcast. So that's what I'm working on. A lot of TV coverage in Terre Haute. And then on the side, you know, talk some national sports, NFL, basketball, all that good stuff on Jack of All Trades. Stuart, thanks for having me on, my guy. It was a lot of fun, and I look forward to listening when this comes out.
Of course, man. Of course. Hey, for those of you listening, listen. I can only do so much, right? I can put the podcast together. I can post it on social media, but it's you guys that really helps it grow. So please like, share, email it to your boss, spam it in their emails. I don't care. Spam it in their DMs. If you have a MySpace, put it in their MySpace. I don't care. Whatever you got to do, find a way to help the show grow, because I really and deeply appreciate it. Have a good day, good night, good afternoon, whatever it is. You have a good one, and we will see you next week.